Hi folks, it's Cynthia Dearen here. Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, where I unlock the secrets of international business success. It looks as though Brexit is nearly upon us, and there are still loads of unanswered questions and lots of uncertainty. I checked in with our senior advisor in London, Michael Barron, to get his take on what's likely to happen and what it will mean for the UK and for companies looking to do business in Britain. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So Brexit is getting weirder and weirder. Just when you thought it couldn't possibly get any more ridiculous, it does. We're now less than 2 weeks away from the drop-dead date for the EU and the UK to negotiate a deal. And Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, has taken a deal off to Brussels a few days ago. And it's been met with a fairly tepid response from the EU. Where do you think we are now? You know, and what do you think the outcome is likely to be?
At the moment, as you say, we're trying to negotiate. The Prime Minister is trying to negotiate a new agreement with the EU. His latest position that he presented last week or over the weekend to Brussels has been met by a kind of wall of criticism from kind of everybody on the European Union side, from the Commission, from Parliament, from individual leaders. The French president's given him till the end of the week, this week, to come up with a new negotiating position or to try and resolve this. I think the chances of an agreement are pretty slim. I think one way or another, Johnson, the Prime Minister, is going to be forced to invoke what's over here called the Benn Act, which is the Act of Parliament rushed through last month before the controversy over proroguing Parliament. It's the Act which forces the Prime Minister to ask for an extension to the deadline to at least the end of January. I'm almost certain he will be asked to do that. So that means we will still be in the EU come the 1st of November.
Even though he says he'd rather die in a ditch before he does it?
Yeah, he said a lot of things he'd rather do. And so did Theresa May, or either said things they want to do or said things they don't want to do and have ended up doing the opposite. So Theresa May said, you know, there'd be no general election. There were lots of things. So, and the issue, the key issue remains, the key issue has always been, almost since the day after the referendum, is what do you do about the Irish question? And this is the Irish backstop, because that's the only land border between the United Kingdom and the EU, the rest of the EU. And it is so, because of the history of the troubles, the violence, and then the peace process, the Good Friday Agreement, the creation of what is essentially one economy on the island of Ireland, that is the most politically sensitive and intractable issue. And none of the solutions, whether it's the original backstop under the May agreement or whether it's the slightly complicated, convoluted solution or proposed solution under Johnson's agreement, neither of them are ideal. Neither of them are work. And the current Johnson's proposals have already been rejected anyway by the EU. So I don't think, in terms of the agreement, we're any further forward. And I think the other fundamental issue is that there is enough, I don't know if it's a majority, but there is enough people in Parliament, enough MPs in Parliament who are basically pro-Remain, who don't want the UK to leave the EU, and certainly don't want the UK to leave the EU without a deal, to block the Prime Minister, given that he now has, you know, he no longer has a majority in Parliament, even with the Ulster Unionist parties in coalition. And the Parliament has shown it, there isn't a majority for any one solution, but there seems to be a strong support for basically not leaving the EU.
So you mentioned that there are a lot of MPs who do want to remain.
Yeah.
Do you think that is reflective of the sentiment in the general community? I mean, do you think most people actually want to remain, or is it kind of, you know, a la the US, where there's a very strong public voice which says that, you know, Donald Trump is not very great, but there is a kind of a silent base of support that he has that actually thinks he's doing a great job?
In the country as a whole, I think it's split. It's probably, so the polls on this are all over the place. So it's hard to kind of really pin down what public opinion on this. This seems, the overall trend seems to be, there seems to be a trend away towards Remain and away from Leave. There have been a few polls recently that suggest if you held a second referendum today, that it would be a different result to the first referendum. I think that's because of, A, just how long it's taken. Well, really, we have much more information now about the implications and consequences of leaving the EU and the potential damage it could do to the economy and to all kinds of areas of life here, whether it's science research, whether it's travel, whether it's food standards, whether it's just almost every aspect of life could be negatively impacted in some way.
So you were saying that if the Prime Minister is forced to ask for an extension, we could really see things just as business as usual, at least for the next few months. But let's assume for a moment that we wind up in an ideal scenario where the EU says, no, we're not going to grant you an extension, and you have to go on the 31st of October. Just talk to me about some of those short-term implications that you mentioned a moment ago around food standards, travel, financial passporting, and all the rest of it.
Yeah, well, all that kind of would disappear, on midnight on the 31st of October. So the expectation is there would be huge congestion at ports, trucks trying to get onto ferries across the channel. Huge congestion at airports, queues for immigration, and so forth. People talking about potential shortages of some medicines, maybe potential shortages of some food, just because potential shortages of some of spare parts for industry. Some of the big car manufacturers are planning to close down for the week or 2 weeks over the period, just to ensure there's no disruption and that they can build up stocks of supplies and make minimize disruption. So there's lots of contingency planning going in trying to prepare for this, but the issue is nobody kind of really knows what would happen on the 1st of November if we crash out with a deal. The expectation is there would be a lot of confusion, a lot of congestion, a lot of chaos, and it would take weeks, maybe months, for the for everything to stabilize and get to kind of new normal. And also then there's in the medium after that, there's the longer or the medium longer term economic impact. We've already seen recent economic figures showing a real slowdown in the economy over the last couple of months because of the uncertainty created by potential of a no deal Brexit or just the potential of leaving the EU. So I think it's very hard to underestimate, very hard to overstate this sense of uncertainty in around at the moment, especially amongst a lot of companies. There's no clear path through this at the moment.
If you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, check out the Dearen & Associates website, dearenassociates.com. So it sounds as though there could be quite a few losers from a no deal scenario. Mm-hmm. Can you, off the top of your head, identify any potential winners?
Very hard. I mean, it'll be a political victory for the likes of Nigel Farage and those, really hardline Brexit, pro-Brexit, pro-Leave supporters. Some people in the city might make a fortune by betting on the pound and the money markets. Aside from that, it's very difficult to see any winners. And actually, overall, I mean, the country overall would probably be a loser, especially in a no-deal Brexit, or even in an agreement, even in a situation where there is an agreement, something like the one Johnson has proposed. I think there, as well as the economic implication, the medium to long term, there's the implications for Britain as a country, because what the Johnson agreement essentially does is pushes Northern Ireland further towards the Republic and away from the United Kingdom, despite having the support of the Ulster Unionists, and despite him claiming he's a pro-union. And if Northern Ireland ends up with some kind of special status in the EU after all this. Other parts of the UK, such as Scotland, will also demand some kind of special status and try to stay within the EU after Scotland voted to remain in the 2016 referendum, and indeed other parts of the United Kingdom. So the City of London, talking about financial passport, and the City of London might demand some special status to protect the financial industry. So the longer term implications of this will take, while it might take a few months to get over the initial chaos and confusion, the longer term impacts will stay with us for years to come.
Now, this show, Business Beyond Borders, is all about international business. Yeah. Do you think there might be any potential upside for foreign companies coming to the UK that are non-European companies? Because, pre-Brexit, anybody coming in from outside really had to compete with services and goods that were coming in from the rest of Europe, really competing with the single market and the customs union. But, if we have a no-deal Brexit, or even if we have a negotiated hard Brexit, suddenly the UK is going to be outside Europe. Do you think there could be opportunities for example, New Zealand dairy products, which will suddenly not have to compete against things coming in at a lower rate, cheese and yogurt and specialty stuff like that from Spain and Italy?
Potentially. But I think, again, one of the uncertainties is kind of what will be the trade rules after, in the event of Brexit, if it's a no-deal Brexit, we're apparently just kind of switch onto WTO agreements, and it will take, some time to kind of work out how those actually work and people get used to them. So there may well be, and depending on kind of the nature of agreement and any kind of transition period and any kind of then free trade agreement or a trade agreement that the UK outside the EU reaches with the EU will set the environment for non-EU business from, example, Australia or New Zealand or elsewhere. The kind of pro-leave politicians kind of claim, this will be the opportunity, we'll be able to have goods from a much wider variety of countries, Australia, New Zealand lamb and Australian products and so forth. But that's, still to be tested, and so you still don't know what the rules of the game will be in any kind of post Brexit world, and that's a lot of uncertainty because again it depends on how we leave, whether it's no deal or whether it's some kind of negotiated agreement.
And do you foresee labour shortages if there is, if Brexit takes place? The Prime Minister has already threatened that he's not going to guarantee all the Europeans currently in the UK the right to continue living there. Is that going to be a real issue for British business?
I think it's already, my understanding, it's already an issue in some industries. Some industries are already complaining about recruitment problems and shortages of people, particularly the hospitality industry and things like agriculture. But even in kind of areas requiring kind of highly skilled jobs like medicine or engineering or so forth, there are already kind of signs that not being able to attract enough people. And if there's an economic downturn after Brexit, then that will make it harder to attract people here as well. So I think that's again, it's the kind of part of that feeds into the uncertainty and one of the unknowns about all this. But there are already indications of labour shortages in some industries.
So just a couple of weeks away from Brexit, we think, and still lots of questions with no answers.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Michael, thanks for coming on the show today.
All right, good to speak to you.
If you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, check out the Dearen & Associates website, dearenassociates.com. Our consulting services, which include market research and modelling, cross-cultural consulting, and strategic business connections, deliver deep insights and create value for larger companies looking to scale internationally. If you're from a smaller organisation that wants to expand its global footprint, take a look at our International Business Accelerator program, which my team and I created to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of going global. The program helps business owners to build a great strategy without having to reinvent the wheel. It creates the momentum to put the strategy into play, and it helps them to generate or raise the funds that they need to get an international expansion off the ground. We built it especially for founders and CEOs who want to take their business to the next level and wondering where to start. It's structured in a way that's simple to follow. It's digital so that you can take part from anywhere in the world. It's a lot of fun and our members love it. Check it out at dearenassociates.com.